Moments after 3 o'clock. I need to participate in the sport today, but I'll be back after that. Thank you.
All right, we have to take that into account. And as you know, we are still awaiting one of the proposed amendments in writing. Have we got everything now? All right, then we could make a quick stop. Let's, on that note, as part though of the opening, I should have just indicated one thing to you, but it will come under apologies. We were made aware of the Honourable Andrassini's illness, initially by the Honourable McIntosh. But despite people telling me it was on Twitter and all over, I thought it advisable to make some communication directly with the Honourable Andrassini, which I did through email, and it was confirmed that, you know, he has unfortunately got a very serious medical challenge, and on behalf of the committee, I sent a message of you know, well wishes, but also indicated to him in that message that knowing him as we do after all these years, we know that he will explore every avenue while seeking alternative treatment options. And thirdly, I indicated that, he's a valuable member of the committee and that his contributions it certainly enabled us to look at things differently, and in some cases they were also used and in our deliberations and contributed to our the robust legislation that the committee produces. So I think that really on behalf of the committee to himself and also as a media statement. Thank you very much. Right. We move immediately into the formal consideration of the Broad-Based Black Economic Empowerment Bill. And this is the formal consideration. Everyone knows this is a process where they have that last opportunity in committee of proposing amendments. I hope I'm making that clear. Right. So I will seek to be guided by our committee secretary on this, and move towards the motion of desirability that in the opinion of the committee legislation of the committee, legislation is desirable to amend the Broad-Based Black Economic Empowerment Act of 2003. So as to insert certain definitions and to amend others, to clarify interpretation, to provide for the remuneration of council members, to promote compliance by organs of state and public entities, and to strengthen the evaluation and monitoring of compliance. to include the creation of incentive schemes to support black-owned managed enterprises in the strategy for broad-based black economic empowerment. Provide for the cancellation of contract or authorization to establish the Broad-Based Black Economic Empowerment Commission to deal with compliance of broad-based black economic empowerment, provide for offences and penalties, and to provide for matters connected therewith. We now, as you know, move clause by clause. So first of all, can we have someone to propose the agreement with the first part of the motion? This does not mean you're adopting the bill at this point. Thank you, Honourable Khadebe. Seconded by the Honourable Aili. Right.
Madam Chair, I just want some clarity on the documents that we have in front of us. We've just received a very short document here, which is an amendment to Clause 8. Now, is that the amendment to the Clause 8 of the bill that we've now got, or is it on the original bill that we were working on? That's what I'd like to get clarity on.
Honourable McIntosh, just as Coast has brought some amendments here, and we've got, at least I have got them. It's an AMC one, a Coast one here. I know that there was one coming from the Honourable Hill Lewis, but meanwhile there's one proposed by the Honourable Advocate Anton Albers from the Freedom Front. And then the DA one, which I now have in my hand, Honourable Hill Lewis, is one from yourself. But we won't take them out of sync. I hope people understand. You remember how we've done the other legislation. We will go clause by clause. You will either adopt that in a particular clause, or you'll raise your hand to put in your amendments. I hope everyone understands that. Are we all on the same page? Honourable McIntosh?
Are we working off, Madam Chair, B42A or B42B?
We're working with A and B. And I know it's very important, because this is legislation, that we are together. So we now are all together. Right. Now, we move from, I'm talking at this stage, moving to B42B. All right? Because that is what was put here. We then go into the amendments that have already been made, which incidentally are already incorporated on this document of B42B. Right. Members, I won't ring, I'm not obliged to read every line here, per se. But, and we've done the first part, I will then go through, be it enacted by the Parliament of the Republic of South Africa as follows. Now, the first thing we have to do is to move the triple B, okay? The triple B, double E, that's under Clause 1, Section 1A, means any transaction, practice, scheme or other initiative which affects compliance with this Act or any other law promoting broad-based black economic empowerment. The triple B, double E verification, means a person who performs functionary work in connection. Do you want me to go through each one? All right, okay. That's the first part of, you know, your A. It's still a continuation, but with that first amendment, do we have an agreement? We need the one I've just read. That was the triple B initiative means. You know, it's the first part of the A. It's line 8, I think. Right. You just put your hand up to move. That's Honourable Khadebe, seconded by Honourable Madamurva. We move on to the next one. Triple B double E, verification professional. The amendment is, means a person who performs any work in connection with rating the status of enterprises in terms of broad-based black economic empowerment compliance on the authority of or for a rating agency accredited by a triple BEE verification professional regulator. Can we have someone to move that amendment, please? Yes, sorry.
I think you just have to note that on line 11, performs and any need to be separated by a by a spec.
In fact, please note that right now. It's a typo there. Right. On the point of mover then, and I think we did have one, but let's have again. Honourable Van der Merwe, seconded by Honourable Khadebe. I mean, Honourable Kwabasa, my apologies. The two of you sitting first together. Right. Then we have the first point amendment here coming up, still under 1A, triple B, double E verification professional regulator. Means a body appointed by the Minister for the accreditation of rating agencies or the authorization of a triple BEE verification professional. Right. On that note, can we have somebody to propose that amendment and second it? Proposed by the Honourable Khadebe, seconded by the Honourable Aili. I'm just concerned that other members are appearing to have problems, but it's always good to have the committee itself agreeing on what we do agree, and when there's a problem, to disagree on it. Okay. So let's get a more collegiate approach to the legislation. Right. Okay. Now we come to still on 1, but 1B, and we move to by the substitute for the definition of black people of the following definition. I'll read it as one full sentence. Black people means persons classified as African, coloured, Indian or Chinese under apartheid laws. All right? Now, at that point, I just want to check if there were amendments here. Want to do them separately. Now, this is the point is this, is those who have been proposing some of the amendments, when we read the clause out, there's no need for you, obviously, to agree because you're going to propose an amendment later, aren't you? Fine. Can I have somebody to propose that amendment, please? Honourable Khadebe, seconded by Honourable Kwabasa. Now, we then ask, are there any objections? If so, if you have an amendment. Honourable Hill Lewis. Well, it looks like all, we've got three. We'll recognise Honourable Hill as I did, yes.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I'm sorry that there's a little hand-scrawled note on the bottom of my amendment, which I wrote myself and then realized I'd have to copy it for the rest of you, but I'll explain that in a minute. Chair, let me just firstly explain my objection to the current iteration and then secondly my amendment. The way that the clause is current phrase, Chairperson, relies on a set of legislation which is no longer on South African statute books and for very good reason. Those were done away with when apartheid was done away with, and the problem is that while we can make theoretical reference to them, when they're in our laws, it gives practical life to them in some way that I don't think any South African would want to give any further practical life to apartheid legislation. In the sense that in the case of a dispute, if, for example, you know, someone were to contest that they were in fact that person, despite what someone else says, we would then have to go back to apartheid legislation as per this clause to check if that person met the definition as per that legislation or not. And I think that that should be anathema to any Democrat in the New South Africa who wants to really give no further life to apartheid legislation. And so I know that in the subcommittee, before Mr. Khadebe makes this point, I know that in the subcommittee it was in fact, this arose out of a discussion that Honourable James tells me that he in fact initiated. But I made the point to him, the point that I've just made to you, that we really don't want to breathe any further life into apartheid legislation in any way. And I think convinced him of that point last week. And so he agreed that I could then move a new amendment. So I just want to put that on the table. So we then went back to this chairperson, and you have this piece of paper in front of you. We started from first principles. The theoretical foundation, the principal foundation of apartheid was as follows. That each and every person, before they are a person, belongs to a group. And that group is defined for them on their behalf without their permission and without their input in legislation, which is written without them having representation in the body that writes such legislation. That is the theoretical foundation of apartheid. And those groups in South Africa were called races, and those races were classified as African, coloured, Indian, Chinese, and European, as it were. Now, Chairperson, I was 7 years old in 1994, so I can't claim to speak about, with any significant personal experience or knowledge about what happened and what it felt like to live under apartheid. For all intents and purposes, even though I was born in 1986, I consider myself a child of the New South Africa. As Chairperson, I find it completely anathema to me as a South African that in the new South Africa, 20 years after the fall of apartheid, and not just of a government, but of a fall of a system which aimed to define people into categories which they themselves did not define themselves. I can't accept that we still do that 20 years after democracy. And so what I've tried to do is craft a definition of black people which does not still do that. This is not an attempt at, I really want to make this very clear, it's not an attempt at political point scoring at all. This is something I believe very, very deeply as a South African, and I think all South Africans ultimately should believe, that we are trying to pursue the ideal of a non-racial South Africa. It also recognizes, of course, that the whole edifice of apartheid discrimination was based on race. Of course it was. And so redress needs to, any program aimed at redressing the wrongs of the past needs to redress it on the basis of race, largely. But I think that it's possible for us to achieve that in a way that does not perpetuate the racial divisions of the past, but finds a new way to unite South Africans in a non-racial way, but still redress the economic injustices of apartheid. So what I've done is I've said that the term black people is a term, is a synonym for historically disadvantaged persons who are citizens of the Republic. A and B are unchanged chairs, I won't even read those. But the crucial thing is C. And due to the apartheid policy that was in place, did not have the franchise in national elections between 1959 and prior to the introduction of the Constitution 1983 version. Now let me just explain that quickly. I've taken the date 1959 because that is the date at which all coloured or black people were removed from the voters' roll in South Africa. I know that the National Party was elected in 1948, but in fact it's one of those bizarre little stories of history that there were six people, for example, in Natal, six black people who could vote up until 1959 because of some little exemptions here and there. So I've used 1959 as the best date, not 1948. because that is the date, I think it was the passage of the South African Amendment Act that finally removed all coloured and black South Africans from the voting roll. And then, of course, the Constitution of the Republic 1983 was a disgraceful document because it still excluded black people from the tribunal system. We can't take a date after that because coloured and Indian voters were included on a roll at that time, even though it was a separate voters' roll, most shamefully. So I've actually left us an option here there which we can debate because it would, in my view, be acceptable to simply say prior to introduction of the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa in 1983, but we can also take it to the interim constitution 1993. So, Chair, that's briefly the rationale, and I have some thoughts on my colleague's amendments, which I've seen already, Chair. I don't know if you want me to comment on those now or later.
Well, thank you, Honourable Hilders. You see what the issue is normally speaking, and the way we do it, is that we have to vote on each one of these separately. That is the way we would normally proceed here.
I see.
But given that, you know, we do have the flexibility of hearing all three of you at the same time, and I do that in fairness to the three of you because you may decide to use one or the other's interpretation. So let me rather recognize at this point in time the Honourable Albert.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm not sure if my colleague next to me was supposed to be first. But it doesn't matter.
And I've done that. You said you were leaving at 3.
Oh, yes, thank you very much for recognizing that. Yes, once again, as Mr. Or Honourable Gordon Hill Lewis has indicated our history, the claims that I have made try to do away with using race-based labels in the first place by looking at existing legislation. And that is the Employment Equity Act. If you look at clause 1 on the first page of my proposed amendment, you've noted that I've given two alternatives. One is to use, instead of black people, previously disadvantaged individuals, or PIs, or alternatively designated groups. Designated groups is the action word, if I can call it that, that is being used in the Employment Equity Act to indicate which people will benefit under that act and who are excluded. So what that does is it actually takes away the racial connotations and it takes this act into alignment of the Employment Equity Act. The second point of amendment is actually on the definition itself. So first of all is to change the definition's label. Secondly, to change the definition itself, to read first classified as black as opposed to African as it states now, brown, Indian or Chinese under apartheid laws, including women and people with disabilities in general. This brings in line with the Employment Equity Act, the label, changing label from African to black, the reason for that is not to imply by that label that people who are not black are not African. We talk about an inclusive country, we talk about a constitution, and we know constitutions is based on inclusion of all people in Africa who live in it, and by denoting that some people are African and others are not, you are implying, as far as I'm concerned, unconstitutionally, that some people are not African and do not have the same status. The reason for taking away the word colored and replacing it with brown is that colored is a word of history. It has certain baggage. It is regarded as derogatory by some communities. Not all, but many communities do see it as derogatory. And they do regard themselves rather as brown community, people from the brown community, as opposed to colored. And that's the reason for that change. The inclusion of women and people with disabilities, as I said before, brings this bill in line with the Employment Equity Act. For there's no reason not to include people who are regarded as part of the designated group in the Employment Equity Act, not to be included in this one for empowerment purposes. The remaining of my argument on page 2 in the sub-bullets are legally technical in nature, which will need some legal advice from Parliament and the state law advisors. But basically, what it boils down to is that the usage of employment equity in terms of the BBBE scorecard and code of good practice of 2007 refers to the Employment Equity Act itself as the way to ascertain whether persons or whether a company has made inroads or has progressed actually with regards to employment equity. And that includes women in general and people with disabilities in general. So there's a dissonance between this act in terms of its codes, which refers to the Employment Equity Act, but it's not applied in the code itself. Now, that makes me jump to the trumping clause. The trumping clause, if you look on page 3.
What I want you to do is deal with this, but simply make a light reference to the other, because you usually have
yes.
to go
okay.
through the fire. I will allow you to make a reference.
Also now connected. The trumping clause obviously is trying to trump all legislation before this amending bill. But if you look at the trumping clause as it is stated in the Employment Equity Act itself, clause 63, it is quite clear that it says that if any conflict relating to matter dealt with this act arises between this act and the provisions of any other law other than the Constitution, or an act of Parliament expressly amending this act, the provision of this act prevails. So what it means, the only thing that can trump the Employment Equity Act is the Constitution itself and an act of Parliament expressly amending it. And the BEE Bill does not expressly amend the Employment Equity Act. Therefore, it can't trump the Employment Equity Act law. It's impossible, legally impossible to do that, unless you amend the Employment Equity Act first. For the Employment Equity Act's trumping provision in Clause 63 refers to existing and future legislation, because it talks about expressly amending this act, and that happens in future. So the law advisor's opinion on this is wrong, as far as I'm concerned. And therefore, the Employment Equity Act will inform how the BEE Act is to be applied in terms of its codes. Thank you.
Thank you. I just want to check on something, Honourable Elvis. Did you say you were leaving exactly at 3? Because obviously you can't change your speaking time or what?
Madam Chair, yes, just after 3, I'm not sure what time I will come up, you know, how these debates go. Some people arrive and some don't, but we worked out that I will probably be speaking about 3:30, so if I can leave by 4:15 or 4:20, I think that'll be fine.
Because I obviously want you to be here when we move, you know, as we move this, all right? Thank you very much for that. We will just now have the state law advisors' comments on these, but let us get all of the amendments themselves. And can we please now have Honourable McIntosh?
Thank you, Madam Chair. First of all, say thank you very much for mentioning Mario Oriani Ambrosini, and I think he's a man who made a great contribution, in fact, at CODESA already, and also to this Parliament. I think it's a real tragedy, and we just pray that God might do some amazing miracle. Madam Chair, I think Mr. Jordan Lewis has given a very good presentation. I would just like to say that I think that this bill and the definition that we're bringing in is, let's put it this way, a touchstone for South Africa. You know, in terms of our new South Africa, probably, or it's a charter you can drive a bus through, some people say, but it's a thing called the Freedom Charter. And one of the ringing statements of the Freedom Charter is that South Africa belongs to all who live in it. And President Mandela, from the dock in Pretoria in the old synagogue, made a speech in which he cast a vision for South Africa, which was non-racial. Now, as I have said before, South Africa has not had a revolution. It has had a settlement, a process of change, and I think we've all recognized that that process needs to address what I call a recoupment, or what I think in Afrikaans is a good word, a rechtstellende actie, and which my colleague Honorable Hillouis calls redress. Now, but what is this bill about? It's about doing business with government, fundamentally. In other words, if you're doing business with government, or what we used to call quangos in the old days, then you have to, you are compelled to meet certain requirements, which are essentially race-based. Now, Madam Chair, I don't want to go into, if our economy keeps growing and it goes as well as we do go, I think a lot of this will just fall aside because our economy will become so good that we'll get ahead of it. But my concern with this bill is that it is entrenching not only a race concept, but there's a sense, and it's an attitude which I fought against all my political life, that people's abilities and competence are defined by their skin color. Now, my own view and my own experience, and particularly I believe what's happening in South Africa now, and particularly from does an analysis of the results, is that this myth and the conviction that black people are somehow not as competent as other races is absolute nonsense. And what worries me about this bill is that it has a subliminal agenda which addresses this. Because this book is essentially about entrepreneurship. That's what it's about, and we keep being told that. And I actually believe if you educate people, you give them opportunities, they will become entrepreneurs. I believe that. So what we want to do is to get away from the race element. And then I think we also need to address the fact that the people today, and young people today, and you know, I listened to the Honorable Khadebe using a parallel in another meeting where he said, you take the child who's born in Sandton, you take the child who's born in the Zonke Sizwe squatter camp. Now obviously I didn't have time, we weren't discussing it, but Madam Chair, today 30% or more of the children born in Sandton are black. They're not the children of the domestic servants. They're the children of landowners, occupiers living in Sandton. And in the Zonke Sizwe country, the chances are 50% of those people are Zimbabweans and Mozambicans who have come to South Africa for a better life to get ahead. And I mean, just that fact alone, to me, is such an incredibly hopeful thing. I mean, I am thrilled by the way South Africa is moving. And that doesn't mean I don't see the need for redress. But I believe we need to put out race. And then my last point, Madam Chair, is if we adopt the amendment which basically myself and James, Hillouis, are a name broad agreement, the only difference I've made is that I've said that a kid who's born in 1994, in other words, a young kid who's 20 today, is not covered by this bill. So they are free to enterprise in whatever way they like. But the real point is that, I'm sorry, now I've forgotten my point, it's distracted.
That's why I'm pointing, maybe just conclude.
I want to conclude, but before I get distracted. But I think I've made my point, Madam Chair. But I just feel very strongly that this bill, and that's why I want to appeal to my ANC members, colleagues on this bill. Think of what the Freedom Charter said. Think of what Nelson Mandela said. Think of the vision of the new South Africa. And I believe that this amendment, which we are proposing, will catch all the blacks in it. the black blacks or the blacks or whatever it is. So why not rather get away from race?
I think other members may be worried as to why one has allowed some members to speak for much longer than usual. And that is only because this is such a serious piece of legislation. And other members have had since quarter past two to now, which is virtually three. You have 2 minutes, Honourable Hill Lewis.
Chair, I wanted to start commenting on their amendments. Yeah.
Now, we at a point, it's just about three. We can go a couple of routes. Now, I'm going to give the ANC the first opportunity, you know, in this regard. Is you may comment on what you have heard as a whole, or you may comment on individual pieces, per se. We've all got them, I take it. Yes. Phil Lewis, I've got Hill Lewis. You have got Hill. Where's the Hill Lewis? Has everyone else got Hill Lewis?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Now, I'm looking at the whip. You may wish to speak last or first. When would you like to speak? First. Yeah, right.
All right. Thank you, Chairperson. On this issue of this amendment, what I'd really like the people to desist from is to quote from the charter which they do not understand. Because ourselves were taught this charter when we were very young, so we know it inside out. The very same charter speaks about the nationalization of the monopoly capital, the banks and the mines. I don't know whether the member supports that now. Speaking about the charter, I don't know whether he supports that. That's why that they must want to quote it conveniently so omit certain parts of the charter. When the charter said South Africa belongs to all living in black and white, that's an ideal country we wanted to have. It remains an ideal now. We have not achieved that. Part of this amendment bill is to try to achieve a realm whereby the people belong, have a sense of belonging. A person who is not having the skills to be an entrepreneur because of the apartheid laws, whatever, this issue of South Africa belongs to all who live in it will remain a myth to him. So that's what we must interpret this thing properly. Even what I'm also aware of is a misquotation of the former president of the country, Nelson Mandela. I think that really they cannot appropriate that person because really whatever he articulated, it was the vision of the African National Congress. Because whatever he said, he did that on the basis of the policy of the ANC. We cannot come now and selectively quote him and misquote him in the process. Because when it was very clear that in the talk in 1964, when he spoke about the fact that he detested black domination and what, it really meant that because that one was based on the Freedom Charter itself. What is critical is that one, we are having a situation whereby the people are unequal. Being unequal for them to have a stake that most of them, they are not unequal because of their choice. It's because of the apartheid laws which were in place, who disenfranchise them. So when you disenfranchise the person through education, you know, the damage you should do is for centuries, because it's a lifetime. You take someone who undertook Bantu education and someone who undertook Model C education, those two things are different. Those two people are really radically different. That's why, because that one who undertook Bantu education, because that was being prepared to be a servant, a good servant. That one who undertook Model C education was being prepared to be a governor, to be an economist, to run the country. So those two people are different. So for us to bring these two people into the same stream, these interventions of these laws, we must intervene through the law. Part of that, I acknowledge, I'm very happy that the Honorable Hill Lewis acknowledges the fact that the apartheid policy was based on race. So what the problem I'm having with this thing is trying to do away with race as if it never existed. That would be wrong. That's why you go now, even today, Chairperson, go to Germany, the Nazi Party, the places of the Nazi Party, they are illegal in Germany. But for them to be illegal, they are in the law. That's why in the law, explicitly, they quote narcissism, that this thing, we are found practicing that, you will be charged and taken to prison. You will be charged and taken to prison. It does not mean that when they refer to narcissism, they are resuscitating that. There is, no, even here, we are not resuscitating racism. The issue here is that we are having a point of reference, that this problem we are having here, it started here, at a racial base. So for us to be moving forward, we must, it does not mean that we are going to resuscitate those apartheid laws, but we have a point of reference with them, so, as a starting point. So what is critical also, Chairperson, that's why that the term, this issue of black people as a term of convenience is wrong, Chairperson, because it was really the issue when the black people were being oppressed. It was not an issue of inconvenience to them. To them, oppression was a reality. It was not an issue of inconvenience. It was a reality. That's why we speak today now. When we go to June, when we go to June 19, we'll be having 100 years of the hijack of the land of the country. It took 100 years. That act, even before the National Party was there, was very explicit. The people who were removed from the land were the natives. They were the natives. They were the natives. Natives Land Act of 1918. It's very clear. It was categorizing those people. So it does not mean that when we refer to that, we are resuscitating that apartheid. No. It's a fact that when we do it even in land, we know that these people were dispossessed legally so because of this thing. So this issue of trying to do away with race now, we have no choice here. We have to refer to that. Because apartheid was racist in parallel. So we cannot run away from that fact. So that's why I say that even all this issue again of progress, of the Employment Equity Act, this issue, we must understand that aspect also. The Employment Equity Act and progress, those two acts are different. They are addressing different things. They are addressing different things. So we cannot conflate the two into one. This one is purely dealing, that's why I agree with the Honorable McIntosh, entrepreneurship. This one is dealing with the black economy is exclusively to that. That other one deals with the issue of the workplace situation. It deals with the workplace situation. That's why other polar aspects, when coming to the issue of the Employment Equity Act, you'll find that the white women are covered there. Well, because in the workplace, they will not be allowed to be CEOs of the event, multinationals. That's why they are covered. The people who discover, they are covered there. But when coming to the broad-based black economy empowerment action, we are dealing with the issue of creating industrialists to the people who were not afforded a chance. That one is focused on that. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Hudebi. We do have the Honourable Van der Merwe, please. I will take you, Honourable Hildewis.
Chair, I will be brief. I think that the ideal situation in our country would be that no one is identified by the colour of their skin. But our reality is very different. I think what this bill tries to do is overturn the apartheid laws against black people. The first point there, that's an introduction, Chair. The first point I'd like to say is, let us not forget that the word black is in the title of this bill. We have to define it. Broad-based black economic. We can't say broad-based previously disadvantaged, what all these other words, you know, designated groups. Black is in the title of the bill. The redressing of the apartheid law has complete relevance here because we are particularly trying to do that. It's not as if we want apartheid laws in our statute. We're trying to get rid of them by creating legislation that protects and empowers people who were classified by the apartheid law. I think that makes a logical sense. Our reality is that we still live with the legacy of apartheid all these years later. Also, the third and final point I want to make is that the franchise as a criteria does not make any sense to me, because the franchise was only one disadvantage or one discrimination visited upon black people. Others included not being able to own businesses or own land, and a string, a slew of where they live and so on. So to define people in terms of the franchise makes no sense to me. I wanted to support my colleague when he talked about the Freedom Charter, and let's not forget that the phrase quoted from the Freedom Charter by our honourable colleague from Pope says, South Africa shall belong to all who live in it, black and white. So we are living with this word, and we are living with a reality that forces us to make these laws and to identify who we are talking with. The subcommittee has already proposed, let's not forget that the original act talks about black people is a generic term which means African colours and Indians. The subcommittee has already proposed an amendment to that, which I think has been broadly accepted, and it was suggested by DA. So I think, Chair, that we should stick with that proposal from the subcommittee.
Thank you very much, Honourable Vandermeerwe. Honourable Waini.
Thanks very much, Honourable Chairperson and Honourable Members. I just want to highlight few things. Some of them have been raised by our colleagues. Whilst we appreciate the democratic platform of shaping a new South Africa, but also of allowing different political views as part of the democratic process. But also, it's always important that we must move from the political reality, which the whip have said, Honorable Khadir. Few things that I want to raise, which we must consistently correct, is that there are a number of things that have been raised. One of them is that it's 20 years of democracy. And if it's 20 years, so we have to do away with some of these pieces of legislation. But if we take into consideration that since 1652, we have inherited some of these particular problems. And these problems have been entrenched racially, in terms of class, but also in terms of gender. So then, therefore, we cannot assume that within 20 years, then we can roll back the frontiers of colonialism. I think that one must be clarified. Secondly, there's also a notion of creating an impression that the rainbow nation must be a hollow rainbow nation, where we just inhale each other without tackling the fundamental problems that face our own society. Because if we talk of the rainbow nation, what is the class character of that rainbow nation? Where is the economy? Who's wielding the power when it comes to the economy when you talk rainbow nation? Because we can meet together, we can be in the stadium, one stadium together, watching blue pools and everything. But the bottom line is that after that game, different people go to different places. Some they would go to Nyanga. We've seen the last few weeks, there were protest actions all over the country. And every time you see protest, it's black people that are protesting against their own government. It's black people. They are not only protesting only about service delivery. They talk jobs, they talk issues of empowerment. And the fundamental question, which government must create a platform for itself to be toppled by the people? I think this is one of the serious things that we must take into consideration. So we're not championing a hollow rainbow nation. We want the rainbow nation that ensures that people of this country are equal. But also we must bear in mind that in 1969, even the African National Congress foresaw some of the particular problems. Hence, it warned in Morogoro Conference, 1961, that the failure to transform South African economy to benefit people as a whole. It never said that people as a whole will be fitting to the racial supremacy. That's what the ANC said. It was in 1969. And it has the failure to transform this economy, the movement, and the liberation will be like a skeleton of former size. So we can't in 20 years and in the next 25 years remain with the political power without tackling the aspect of the economic freedom. Hence, the last conference of the ANC was serious about the radical transformation and the transference of the economic power. We have drawn a lot of lessons from the rest of the national liberation movements in the rest of the continent. Some of them are no longer in power without transforming the economy. So the ANC has got a number of lessons. So we cannot continue with some of those pitfalls. I think lastly, even if you go to statistics in terms of Employment Equity Act and you can quote the Black Economic Empowerment, number of companies, multinational and everybody, you can take statistics, have been non-compliant. You can go to Department of Labor and get the statistics. It's an open defiance of pieces of legislation which are a transformation tool. But number of people are not willing to cooperate with government. Why should we embark on different policies in terms of ensuring compliance if people embrace the rainbow nation? So I think the fact of the matter, we have two worlds in South Africa, the first world and the second world. And it is therefore our duty through the business of legislation to address some of those issues. The Constitution in general protects everybody. So those are some of the issues which I wanted to highlight. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. I really do believe, Honourable Hill Lewis, you did have, believe it or not, 20 minutes before. So if we can just give you 1 minute, may stretch to 1.5. Thank you.
It's quite a fundamental amendment, and almost every speaker responded to me, so I don't think that that's going to be adequate, but I'll try my best. Yeah, Honourable Fana Madva, if that is the ideal, then we as legislators have a unique opportunity to press forward towards that ideal now. If not now, then when? Honourable Khadebe, we are not erasing, I'm not proposing that we erase reference to race. I acknowledge it as much as you do, and it has defined this country's history from the 15th century most awfully and tragically. If you read my amendment in C, I said, due to the apartheid policy that was in place, I acknowledge that right up front, the first words, due to the apartheid policy that was in place, are these people disenfranchised? I actually agree with you, Honourable Khadebe, on the word convenience. There's nothing, apartheid was certainly not just inconvenient, and I actually think we should take that out. We can just say black people is a synonym for historic, just take out and start that synonym, because I think that point is well made. Honourable Khadebe also, or knows was kind of member that, made the point about the name of the bill. You'll see at the top of my page, I'm not suggesting we change the definition or the name of the definition. This still is a definition of black people. Apologies, I thought you were responding to me. Then you also spoke about using franchise as a factor. I agree, of course, there are many, many other profound discriminations and disadvantages, but franchise is the one that just captures them all, because at the end of the day, we can't have a 15-page definition, and the thing that runs, the kind of golden thread, if you will, that runs through all of apartheid policy was the fact that the people that they defined as black, as Indian and coloured, could not vote. And so that's, if you will, a catch-all for that. Honourable Khadebe, I mean, I appreciate so profoundly the points you made, but let me just ask you a practical question. If I decide to define myself under this definition that you have, classified as such under apartheid laws, If I decide to find myself on the form when applying for a government tender as black, and you as the government department come and say to me, but no, you're not black, and I say, yes, I am, the only way under this definition that we will resolve that dispute is to actually go back to a piece of apartheid legislation. I don't even know where we'll find that legislation. But we'll have to go back to a piece of apartheid legislation and say, right now, was Jordan Hill Lewis classified as African, colored, Indian, or Chinese under apartheid legislation? I put it to you that we should never have a situation in South Africa where we must go back to that legislation and apply it to that. We must find a new way, a different way of doing that. So even if you reject what I'm saying, even if you reject this proposed amendment, I really want to argue that breathing new life into apartheid legislation today is just wrong.
Honourable Kobasa, and then we do.
Yeah, Chairperson, one wants to just go back to the objective of the Act broadly, to say that it seeks to achieve inclusive economic participation, which also includes broadening the ownership of the means of production, extending that to those, extending the ownership of the means of production to those who were denied the ownership of means of production. Seeks to accelerate the transfer of skills so that the above, as I have said, are achievable. Now that's just shortly what I understand by this. And it tells me that this is a very long process. It cannot, therefore, be confined to, I'm trying to refer to what the Honorable McIntosh says about those born after 1994. It cannot be taken it cannot be meant to exclude those who were born after 1994, precisely because the scale and proportion and consequence of apartheid exclusion and exploitation discrimination, economically speaking, all of those are too deep, far-reaching, for us to begin now to say, no, they are not affected. The fact that the children who go to former DC schools, the fact that their children are born in Sandy and elsewhere in the white suburbs, or formerly white suburbs, is simply a consequence of us having defeated Good Areas Act. It doesn't address the deprivation, the economic deprivation of those people before and after 1994. And that we must deal with long into the future that begins in 1994. The Act, therefore, must be very explicit insofar as it explains who it aims to address in this respect. It can't be bled. We can't have a definition which blares the we can't have an act whose definition of the people it is addressing is black, as the Honorable Lewis also begins to refer. It's got to be explicit. Otherwise we are saying we must have an act that is subject to various interpretations and contestation, and that we can't have an act like that. So Chairperson, I cannot agree more with my honourable colleagues who have spoken before me that these kinds of amendments that are being proposed now are not assisting, not just this committee, they are not assisting this country to go forward. As a matter of fact, if we were to accept these kinds of amendments, we would be saying to the people of this country, the large majority who have been excluded from economic activity, they must be there forever, for generations. And we can't have that kind of act. Lastly, Chairperson, I think all of us must take responsibility. We must take responsibility as members of parliament, the elected representatives, and accept the consequences of history of this country and deal with it. And not try to play and interpret it in ways that would suggest that it hasn't ever happened. Thank you.
Honourable Mabaza, thank you.
Thank you very much, Comrade Chair. No, I'm also following on the motivations from the ANC members. But it is just unfortunate that wishes are not horses. You know, if they were, a day just before, just after the 27th of April 1994, the country had become the one as described in the Freedom Charter. But that couldn't happen automatically. It's a process that we must work towards. And it will even be of greater benefit if the leaders of other parties were to lead this campaign of correcting the wrongs that have happened historically. It doesn't come out correct if it is the ANC that sees that a wrong was done, and it is the ANC that says that must be corrected. What is wrong with the members, especially members of parties that whose history made them to benefit from apartheid? They should be the first ones to say, look, here we were wrong. Our grandfathers were wrong, our grandmothers were wrong. Now we blame it and we correct. We will be happy from where we are seated. You know, we will have less motivation to do. But now we, just touching on some few words, the 1913 Land Act, for an example, it's a very specific issue. Even if we can say, let's declare that all are equal, but the stark reality is that the proportion of land will still be reflective of 1913 Land Act until something physical is done by leaders of South Africa. If you go to a former homeland and at random you take 100 children there and put them at the university and see whether they will perform, the reality is that they are left far behind. They won't until action is taken to correct. So even job preservation, it does not necessarily mean that from the day when we voted, immediately the skills became created in the country. It's an effort that leaders must engage in to correct. And if leaders don't, then we will find history will judge us badly, that we have not led correctly. Let me end with saying it's always important to call things by their true name, so that even when you correct those. Otherwise, if you become vague in describing what you seek to correct, even the solution will be vague. And then you will not be hearing any solution. Thanks, Colleague Chair. I just wish that members on my right here can say they agree with the motivations from the ANC, so that we say unanimously, this is, yes, you know, thank you.
I'm going to speak before you, Honourable Phil Lewis, but in fact, once we are able to deal effectively with this clause, that is the crux of a whole piece of legislation, you see. you know, we won't be spending the same amount of time. I know I see people looking at their watches. But, you know, we will fail our people. We will fail them. Each one of us sitting here has got constituencies. And we will fail them. If we just say, well, if, you know, look, we better leave now, 2 hours up, 3 hours up. I'm not going to be governed by time. Now, let's get that straight about principle in the legislation. Now, what does I do need to say, and I hope then members will take heed of this. My understanding of political history and economics with respect to the franchise is that the franchise does not necessarily, was not necessarily granted on the basis of this group or that group per se. There are countries where you can have the franchise but not have land and so on and so forth. But being a one-six and not and have a franchise and not have something else. In our own country, women enjoyed the franchise long before they had all other rights, per se. So I think that the word franchise was one of the reasons probably why the Honourable James initially, but I say this on an assumption, Honourable Hill Lewis, not having spent lengthy time, but having heard him in the committee, may have been one of the reasons why that was not included, that word, you know, in his own, you know, the subcommittee's work, as it were. Now, I think that we should avoid slipping down technical slippery slopes, as it were, and, you know, getting caught there. Rather be able to put one's point forward politically without moving in that kind of direction. The other thing is that, you know, I must say this is a new one on me, that black people is a synonym for historically advantaged. Disadvantaged. Yeah, well, you see how confusing it is. But it cannot be seen as a synonym, you see. It can be seen as having been used. Some people say convenience, this, that, and the next thing. But I do not think it is a synonym, per se. The other thing is that we must take cognizance of the fact that certain pieces of legislation, many people here mentioned the Employment Equity Act, and in some cases that it served us well, let's be honest. But what was the purpose of that act, you see? And what is the purpose of this? So we do need to see the difference between the two. They can complement each other, possibly, but they do not necessarily equate with each other, per se, in terms of the intent. And there's one last thing. We have repeatedly said in relation to will this mean, I think it was one of our members here, and you will recall if you said it, this means you're excluding whites from participating in the economy. Remember that statement in the committee? And we pointed out it did not mean the exclusion. In fact, on the so-called page 3, what is it, 1D, you know, C, and then covered under C with A, B, C, D, right up to F, it said under the C there very clearly that it's not limited to. And we all left that in. Do you remember the whole committee? It's not limited to these many other groupings here. And in particular, I looked at the D while people were talking, members, and it says achieving equitable, not limited to, achieving equitable representation in all occupational categories and levels in the workforce. And I think that is probably why the state law advisor has asked us all, and not that he is infallible, but has asked us all to look more holistically at the legislation and not try to look at a line, a word, but to see it in the full context of what is meant here. So I say this because I think it's important that those points are made. I will allow the last comments from yourselves now, but I would like you to speak after everyone, Honourable Khadebe. Honourable Hill Lewis, you had your hand up for some time, followed by the Honourable McIntosh.
See, that's precisely what I'm trying to do, is look at it holistically. I mean, if you're not happy with the word synonym, that's fine, but, you know, then propose something better. But I couldn't think of a word that you can use, general term or broad word, whatever you want to. I'm not interested in, I don't feel religious about the word synonym. I'm looking, trying to look at it as a holistic approach which moves South Africa away from perpetuating the racial classifications of the Population Registration Act, and towards the ideal that Honourable Thando Mbatha spoke about. Firstly, the comment that I forgot to make from the first round was, I'm afraid I do differ quite fundamentally with Honourable McIntosh on the 1994 dates. I wholeheartedly endorse the comments of the other Honourable members. You know, if we think that the disadvantages of apartheid disappeared on the 27th of April 1994, it's just not so. Then, lastly, Chair, you addressed me on the issue of franchise. Again, I repeat, it is true that there were many, many other disadvantages. Of course, we know that there are hundreds of disadvantages other than the fact that those groups of people were not allowed to vote. But the one thing that was common to them all was that they were not allowed to vote. And so this is just a useful technique, if you will, of defining all of those groups of people without, as I said, perpetuating that group definition, that the Population Registration Act definitions of those people. That aside, if the committee chooses to reject this definition, that's fine, this amendment. But not fine, I would like to accept it, but that's one thing. I think if you choose to reject it, that's your decision. However, I still put to you the practical problem of what you do then under the definition you have suggested in a dispute case. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable. You know, what I do appreciate is people have kept their voices down. They've tried to engage each other. That's important. Honourable McIntosh.
Madam Chair, I don't want to be long. I'm actually surprised that the knee-jerk reaction from my colleagues, Barbaza and, from the ANC guys, because in fact... No, all of them. There were guys and girls. You know, I'm not a genderist, but guys nowadays are included gals. Madam Chair, to me, the amendment which we are considering is a very neat addressing, and it will serve the purposes of those people who believe that for 300 years there's been a class problem, etc., etc., and that we've got to address it. What I don't understand is why, to use Hilarious's things, people like Honourable Tawasa and Khadebe are religious about their particular definition. Because as I see it, what is being proposed here is a very good definition which catches everybody in the net, and he makes the point. The vote is so important because the Dompas, what didn't have an impact on the Indians and the colours, it only impacted on black people, I mean black people. Whereas the vote is what is important. So to me, I would have thought that if Honourable Tawabasa and his colleagues had applied their minds carefully to this, they would have said, what a great proposal. It does exactly what we want, and it reduces the race element. So I think that's important. The other thing I do want to remind, because I think we should remember, is that in this report, I don't know what it was about, the Procurement Act, Mogoeng, who's now apparently our chief, well, apparently he is actually our chief justice, he wasn't then, he in a judgment on the Procurement Act, he refers to the Regulation 1H, Now that's which doesn't fall under our department of trade and industry, but a historically HDI means a South African citizen, and they also have a franchise element. But what is interesting, and this supports my point of view, who is a female and who has a disability, provided that a person who obtained South African citizenship on or after the coming into effect of the interim constitution is deemed not to be an HDI. And that is my proposal. But Madam Chair, I don't want to talk any longer. I think we've beaten this thing to death. We've made all our points, and I'm just surprised that the ANC members don't jump at the opportunity to improve the definition with essentially what the DA is proposing.
People are taking them all seriously. I assure you, we've never spent this long on a clue before. Honourable Kulebe.
Chairperson, I think that I really appreciate the attitude of Honourable Hillings, that he understands where we come from and really how this thing, how deep it is. It's really appreciated. But this issue of this, that how are we going to check it going forward, whether a person is colored or Indian, really, I think that one of the critical aspects of any country is to keep the archives. It's very clear. There's no one who must check anything which belongs to the government. That's why when you even go now to the G's office, you'll find the titles of 30-something long time ago. But I think it's very critical. But I don't think that, because we're assuming a future scenario, that someone will fraudulently try to pass himself or herself as colored when he's white. But I don't think we cannot really... have such low expectation from our populace that they can go to that extreme. But Jefferson, with that one, I think that they gave us really, as you said, that this was a robust debate, but the very fact, the essence of the act is that it goes, is broad-based black economic empowerment. That one is the essence. So with Honorable Lewis, acknowledging that he's not married, he's really appreciative. Man. But I would have put another rider, because, you know, I see, as we're discussing here, I see another limitation here. Apartheid came in 1948. Native Rights Act came in 1913, where there was no apartheid. He said it was colonial laws.
Yes.
And then under the colonial laws, these people who are disadvantaged, were discriminated against, were not even called, they were called natives. That's why we have the Native Land Act of 1913. So how are these people, because really the issue of the land itself, as we're quoting that one, it was one tool of disempowerment, one tool of destroying these people. But I think that when we say apartheid laws, sometimes we are limiting it up to, as if this thing started in 1948, but it went well beyond that. Mm. So I think that as we go for teaching, when the legal advisors come back to us, they must show on that. Because really, I would have said that most broadening to natives, black people, persons as far as Africans, African colored Indian or Chinese under apartheid laws, and natives under colonial laws. The issue of native land act is the fact that this distortion we're having now economically, basically was entrenched legally in 1913. So, but by 1913 there was no apartheid law. It was colonial laws, we call it colonial laws. So I think that they must show on that so that by the time we analyze it, or we can look, what is the problem? Or as we're looking at that, what is the problem with the definition which is there now in the Act? What is the problem with that? Because, that definition, the way it is, it's very simple. One sentence, pick one. And then, let me go to it. Black people is a generic term which means Africans, colored, and Indians. If you remember very well, Chair, at the same time, the issue of Chinese didn't come. The challenge was not on the issue of the broad-based black economic empowerment. The challenge was on the equal employment. EEA was on that. What was not on this law? So the court, the expression of the court was on Employment Equity Act, not on the broad-based. So really, what's wrong with that definition? Why do we have to change it? I think that's what they must show. And we're going to tea because someone is very hungry. One of my brothers is very hungry. I think it's a step back break. And then when you come back, you must come with the response. Thank you, Chair.
although as they are chewing on this, and not chewing on their biscuits, it, I think, you see, it's the bee is not saying the people, you know, under colonial times, etc., who were deprived for X, Y, Z, were not, will not be taken into account. It's simply looking at the classification. It's not saying, you know, this, but I just put that piece in because I think the state law advisors, once they deal with this, this is the critical, this is the essence of the legislation here. On this platform, the rest will follow, you see? Can you please do that? And we welcome you back, Honourable Albertson, time to enjoy tea. Thank you. So the tea will just be, please, back at, what is this? It's 3:45, back at just before 4 o'clock, so we can start.
ANNC,
yeah.
We had an in C. Yeah. So what is critical chair? Really, I think that if you can look at this thing so that we really move fast forward, look at the original definition of the bill itself. It's very simple. The term black refers, a generic term refers to African colored and Indian citizens. We know what the, so now it has not even restricted to 1948. So I really, really propose to better that. Let's stick with that definition and then avoid this amendment, which is going to restrict us to start speaking with 1994, 27th. We know that when we go back to that one, it really defines everyone in the different categories in the past. So that's what I really appeal for. I don't know whether the other people, what their view, but really even on the side of the state law advisors, parliamentary law advisors, is it really, does this definition make any difference from what it was in the original act?
I just confirm that your whole team isn't here. And, you know, we also wanted the honourable advocate, Albert, who is now back. because I think we actually spent an hour and a half on this and a little bit more with us coming back with some thoughts, as you know. And it's important, having spent that the others should be back. Right. So, do you have any further comment, Honourable Hill Lewis? Just briefly now, not that 20 minutes, yeah.
Chairperson, I move my amendment as distributed.
Well, first, again, one at a time, of course. So you move your own amendment. Is there a seconder? So you are going to second the Honourable Hill Lewis. The DA amendment. Is that right, Honourable McIntosh?
Correct.
Are you withdrawing your own?
I will in fact with Mr. Hill Lewis. In the interest of progress, I would like to support Mr. Lewis. I withdraw my own.
So, the Honourable McIntosh has withdrawn the both amendment. Then we come to the Honourable Advocate Albert, yes?
Madam Chair, I don't know if you want me to move or just try to explain my discussion first that I had with the law advisors. And they can just come in if they differ with me. But we spoke about the dumping provision and how the Employment Equity Act relates to the bill. And the Act itself, the
Act. We're not really on the trumping provision, you see. So you need to first speak to this one.
It relates to the proposed definition that I have to include women, people with disabilities. They have agreed with me that this bill and the amendments don't trump the Employment Equity Act at all on the narrow basis where the element of employment equity is used in the codes. So if the code talks to employment equity, then the Employment Equity Act must be taken into account, and it must take into account designated groups, which include, in general, women and people with disabilities. And therefore, that stands at the moment. And what I want to do is to make sure that there is certainty about that, because this is a legal interpretation. Is to actually include a clause somewhere that states that in the code reference is made to an element or the employment equity as an element, the Employment Equity Act will be applicable in its full, to the full extent, and not just partially as is happening right now where it's only, where the codes only refer to black people and not designated groups. I hope that makes sense.
Well, your explanation, certainly I understand it clearly. I don't think it's a matter of not understanding it at all. At this point, you really just have a very brief comment on State Law Advisor, Advocate Smuts.
is in relation to the trumping clause.
Yeah, so yours is related more to the trumping. Fine, we're on the definition. So with respect to the definition per se, purely a definition here about substitution for the definition of black people of the following definition. So you want to move your own amendment first. I take it, Honourable Albert.
Madam Chair, yes. In terms of the
other points you've made,
the point I've made and the interpretation, yes. Thank you very much.
Do we have a seconder? You could find yourself in hot water because you're seconding. I'm not sure of the legal thing here in terms of the ruling. No, I think we've got to do it properly. You know, we've all been reminded of that. We have Honourable Hilder is proposing, the Honourable McIntosh, conceding his own amendment and supporting the DA. We have a fresh one from yourself, which you have proposed and you've motivated. But we don't have a seconder. What you may do at the end, I think the Honourable Albert, and you know this, you may provide us with a written comment at the end, but and we will include that, as you know. Yes. But perhaps you can, I've said it on mic, do you acknowledge that then?
Yes, Madam Chair, that's important. Thank you very much.
Unfortunately then that did not get through. So we're then left with your own, which is on the table, the Honourable Hill Lewis plus the amendment. The amendment is an unusual one, and that is with respect to the amendment we made ourselves as a committee. I hope I understand you correctly, Honourable Hadevi. You're asking, the ANC is asking to have that withdrawn and to, if you can, now propose formally so that we can put it to people.
Thank you, Chairperson. The African National Congress proposes that the amendment as it appears in the bill be withdrawn, and then we stick with the definition which is in the Act, which simply says that black people is a generic term which means African colored and Indians, full stop. Thank
you. Right. Now, yes, you're jumping the gun, but thank you very much, Honourable Brandon. Now, the thing is, you actually do have two amendments on the table that have both been proposed and seconded, and it's not often we have to vote. I will put it to we're done with that, I think. I think we've all heard enough. We've spent a lot of time, and I think we have applied our minds. So, can we please, looking at the Honourable Hill Lewis, where is it now? The Honourable Hill Lewis, the amendment here from the DA, was the one with a bit of writing on. I've got the Cope one here, right at the top. I've got the Honourable Elvis here. And here is, and here is the DA one. Are you making any changes to your amendments that you put on the table here? Because you were conceding the issue of convenience, etc. But as it stands, that's how it is written here. So are you taking anything out of that? Please speak to what you may take out, and then we need to vote on it.
Would you like me to read the full thing, or just on a...
No, just to indicate to us, because with every board discussions, I was under the impression that you had conceded that you wanted to remove the term of convenience, okay? So if you wish to do so and read it accordingly, that section.
The first sentence reads, open inverted commas, black people, close inverted commas, is a term for... historically disadvantaged persons who, in other words, the words of, convenience, and synonym are deleted, and the rest reads as is.
Right. And the rest reads as is. So on the basis of that change to the proposed amendment, can we please have, by show of hands, support? We have members of the DA, members of COPE, and the members of the Freedom Front all supporting it. That's three people. And members, actually, we must be more clear about this now. Can we have the second one?
Okay.
Okay, all right, yes, folks. Those four, those opposed. And that's the ANC as I see it, from the whip down, Honourable Derby, Honourable Kabasa, Abasa, Honourable Benganova, Honourable Waiili. Thank you. So the chair only votes for those who may not know when I have to. And that means if it's hung. I actually have to vote. It's not. It's four opposed and three positive. Three supporting that amendment. Three. Five. One, two, three, four, five. Good thing I've got you, because I haven't got the calculator. No. Sorry about that. It's five. Having said that, then, we then move, so that amendment is defeated in the committee.
Madam Chair, could I just ask, the status of my amendment, which I submitted to the Secretary, I'm perfectly happy to forego to support the DA's proposal, but what is, does it go into the record, this amendment?
Yes.
Okay, so that's...
the record. That's why I asked you what you were removing, Honourable Ian Lewis.
Okay.
Yes, now we move to the second amendment that we had, and I recognise you, Honourable Stevie.
As I moved that this amendment, by the substitution of the definition of black people with the following definition, black people, they... persons classified as color, African colored Indian or Chinese under apartheid law, that amendment be removed, and then we stick with the original definition of the Act of 2003. Thank you.
You are proposing the deletion of the earlier amendment the committee adopted, and you are proposing we return to the Act. Right, I have the DDI first, please.
Madam Chair, I apologize. It's not time for me to take the floor. Keep just 15 seconds for the sake of record. Should the amendment that is currently part of the ABLE be rejected on the basis suggested by the Honourable Khareve? Merely, I'm not going to make any argument to this effect, but merely for the sake of the record, then Chinese people would be excluded from the definition that we currently find in the Principal Act. I'm simply stating it as a matter for the record. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Take law advisers on advocates.
Chairperson, I don't have anything to add.
He concurs on that note. I don't know if the ANC would like to just decide to change it to some degree. No. Right. The ANC remains I'm just recognising another hand at the back. It was the parliamentary legal advisor advocate.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to put a little bit that I don't agree with the interpretation that Chinese people will be excluded. There is a court case which was based on the old definition, which specifically said that the Chinese people would fall within the ambit of black people. And that's also my understanding what GDI has said, that they have interpreted in that effect after this court case. Thank you.
Well, now, I want to be quite clear, Advocate Stridham. What has been proposed by the ANC right now as the amendment to go back to the Principal Act and to delete the amendment which the committee put in. You have a problem. When I have a problem, you raised an issue of the Chinese people. Do you not concur with your parliamentary advocate, legal advisor here?
Needless to say, we try to speak from the same mouth as far as possible for the sake of proceedings. The consequence of Honorable Khadebe's amendment would be that this definition would then be applicable. Black people is a generic term which means Africans, colors, and Indians. There is no reference in there whatsoever to Chinese people. Based on the argument of my colleague, it would then we have to rely on a court judgment to the effect that on a certain interpretation, Chinese people can be included in this definition. With all due respect, I'm not convinced that that is the best route to go. If the intention of this honorable committee is to include Chinese people and to make sure that it's clear that they are included in the definition of black people, then I would humbly suggest that the best way of doing it is to make it clear and explicit in the principal act.
What I don't want to do with legislation is to rely on court judgments per se. Now please call a 2-minute adjournment. I really appreciate if the ANC among themselves just discuss this, please, and then came back.
Thank you. Doing what? I actually got it wrong there. I will get short communications to legal advisor on their internet bandwidth blow out. It's a huge bandwidth blow out there. But I've left that brain in the room. And it doesn't have enough people knowledge on the internet. So I specialize in that area. So that's somehow my family member of mine heard about me and came to me and asked me for an interview.
And was it in Los Angeles?
It is. It's a wonderful thing. It's very equal society. It's changing now.
My list. What was the guest list?
Sitting around before the guest list.
No, well, maybe we circulate one as well. Sometimes it lands with a six.
No.
Okay, I'm fine. I'm sure I'm fine.
look at the Swartz here for a minute. No, not here. Not here, I mean. On the mic. Sorry, I should have been more specific. I did see your hand, Honourable Hill, who was here.
I think the idea was just simply to reiterate the point that you made, and then you'll move back. All right.
Chairperson, the point I've made earlier was that in terms of what was under the previous definition, the court considered Chinese people to be classified as colored, and it says that they are included in broad-based but economic empowerment. In terms of the broad-based economic empowerment act, I think it's...
Right. Now that comes from, and in the end I'm going to take the parliamentary legal advisor's position on that for the moment, and then having said that, you can comment at the end, Honourable Hill Lewis, because I think what we've got to get is right on the table now. We were also reminded during that break that that amendment was not very clear as to where it ended. So can you please make that very clear now, Honourable Hill, you are the proponent of the chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. As I said, that really what we want here as the African National Congress is that that definition by black people means persons classified as colored, African colored Indian or Chinese under apartheid law, that part be removed, and then we stick with the original definition of the act. That one is very clear. But then, if you are coming to this issue of Africans or colored or Indians, we must also be very specific that we are referring to those colored, African colored and Indians, who were the citizens of the Republic, who were the citizens of the Republic by birth or descent, or who became citizens of South Africa. So what does that imply? It implies that a person might be colored, or a person might be African from Zimbabwe. Therefore, he came in South Africa in 2006. That person cannot come and claim the benefits of the black economic empowerment. So that one captures that. The second part, A and B, remain as they are. So that we cannot afford, Chair, to carry the whole of India, we cannot afford to carry the whole of Africa, we cannot also be able to carry the whole of America, we cannot. So what we were specific that those guys who were citizens in the country by the 27th of April. So it means that if someone decides to import someone from Kenya, never, that person will never benefit under this thing. So the original, I also concur here with what the advocate so says that definition also, they will transfer the color to the Chinese. But really, what is very critical here, those guys who are disadvantaged under apartheid or under colonial law, there's no intention from this side of the portfolio committee to discriminate against them. But you are covered. Even the law, the case law, which is evolving in the country, this committee will always respect that. But I'm very happy with the definition of advocate swap. And those Chinese were categorized as colored, which then covered everyone across the board. Thank you.
Yes, that certainly has advocate smart. Did you want to comment? But because really, you know, we need to get back on this proposed and seconding. Yes.
Chairperson, yes. The current proposal is that the words in the Act be retained together with the part which occurs on page 3, if I'm not mistaken.
Now, I am going to read, the person who is proposing that will read it as it should be. This is your proposed amendment, and that is the specific area you want to delete. Can you just read that part, the part you want to delete here?
Chairperson, the part which must be deleted here is that part which says black people, persons classified as African, colored, Indian, or Chinese under apartheid laws.
I don't think it's black people you want to...
No, Chair. Remove that thing as it is. And then we stick with the original definition of the original being.
Right, so you're saying...
You replace that
by the substitution for the definition of black people of the following definition.
Yeah.
Persons classified.
Yeah.
You want that
to
be removed.
Yeah.
So if it's not too clear to me, and I need to be very clear, can I get the Honourable Van der Merwe?
Chair, I think we have to delete from by the substitution for the definition of black people, because we're not substituting. We're going to be...
No. You see, you have to keep that first part in. By the substitution, that's not what's been amended or whatever, for the definition of black people of the following definition. And then we get your definition.
To make these things simple, number B, number B, that first part of B, is not needed. Is not needed. So even that we are not amending the original, we are not amending that definition from the Act. So we don't need that. But what we can say at the end of the by addition, what number B, then we have to add that A and B. Because in the original Act, Chair, that definition of black people is a generic term which means colored in Indian. And then we add, we are not substituting anything because we are adding something new which qualifies who are we protecting. Not only any African, not only any colored, not any Indian. Are you getting it correct?
You see, I think what the problem is that, you know, those who are finally going to do the technical amendments are not clear at all. But now, I hope you are clear, Advocate Smuts.
Yes, I would propose that the committee retains the B part by the substitution for the definition of black people of the foreign definition, and we say black people, and if you quote from the Act, is a generic term which means Africans, Coloureds and Indians dash without any bracket and without any underlining. So you're merely repeating what the Act says.
That's what I'm saying, that all you need to remove is the last two lines at the bottom of the page departing after Indians, as I understood it. After Indians. In other words, person classified. You're going to keep in of up to Indians.
Take away the bracket.
But then you're going to take away the classifications, etc. You're keeping in the earlier part, which is part of what was there before. It is part of it. But we can't, you know, this handsome's got to be clear. Right. Will you simply read what it is your amendment is? Right. That's all.
Chair, I've got a legal fund here. I think you understand the intentions of what I want to say. You say that I must just read black people is a generic term which means African, colored and Indian. And who are citizens of the Republic of South Africa by birth or descent, or who became citizens of the Republic of South Africa by naturalization, one, before April 27, 1994, or on or after April 27, 1994, and who have been entitled to acquisition by naturalization prior to that date, and then made the full stop there. And then, but where that one, that other aspect, we cleaned out that one.
Right. Now that's read into the record, and it is proposed then. I mean, these things are difficult because it's like a third amendment on here. And it was seconded originally by yourself, Honourable Van der Merwe. Are you right? Okay. Now we need a vote, notwithstanding the fact that the amendments has already been opposed. And we have those in favour of this amendment of the ANC. Right? That is the five members, Honourable Kadebe,
Honourable Obasa, Honourable Mabasa, Honourable Bendeleva, and Honourable Waili. As opposed, we have the Honourable Hill Lewis, and the Honourable Advocate Albert, and the Honourable McIntosh. Right. And that is three different parties, the DA, COPE, and the Freedom Front. Right. I think I'm going to ask the legal people to ensure that this comes out as was intended on the record. We now move from this particular point, but those who have already made comments and who have been retained in some way, you know, it'll be retained for the record. Okay. So they're not being thrown out. Thank you. Honourable Hill Lewis.
Thanks, Chair. I just wanted to raise a concern. Of course, I've got no problem with parties meeting, you know, for the meeting to be adjourned briefly while parties caucus about their view. But, Chair, in South Africa, we observe a separation between the party and the state, and it's not appropriate for senior officials of the Department of Trade and Industry to attend party caucuses, even if they are brief. If there's any view that the DTI wanted to put on the table as to what they preferred in the bill, they can put it to the entire committee and not to party caucuses. Thanks, Chair. I just wanted to put that on the record. I don't need any response, but I just wanted to put that.
No, I think that this deserves a response because it's quite a serious issue. I'm not sure who the person was that you are referring to. The DDG itself. There was nothing that he said which hasn't already been said. It was a point that was made here on the committee about the Act itself, which had gone to court and where this had happened. And certainly, I will take the hands of the ANC. Honourable Recorder, yes, you got me totally confused now. DDI, Mr. Recorder, what was it in the Act that you said?
I just want to clarify that, in fact, I asked the Secretariat whether I can approach you.
Okay. I didn't know that, I'm sorry.
Yes, I did ask the Secretariat, because, you see, I was very conscious of that fact that it's one party there. Because, in fact, I was approaching you.
Yeah.
Okay,
I came back to the chair, as you will notice, and left my valuable party caucus and took the information. But really, it was putting me on track, which is why I delayed Honourable February we were reading. So my apologies. Can we continue then? And that is, I take that covers you though, Honourable Mabasa and Sir Debbie. Right.
Yeah.
Page 3. After all of that, right, okay. Looking at these amendments. It's so long, right? Amendment of 3. And we are still on page 2 here. On page 3, in line 13, after broad base to assert black. That was general agreement from all of us. Do we agree? Do we still agree? Now, move it, please. Move it, someone. Honourable Khadibi, seconded by Honourable... Then we move again down to the same page, line 29, to omit including the promotion of local content procurement. Everyone on the right page, page 3. Can we have someone to propose that? Honourable, it's line 29, according to this here, in page 3, where is it here now? Line 29, to omit including the promotion of local content procurement. Yeah. Oh, I see the lines are out of sync. My apologies to you. But I mean, that's from the amendment itself.
And if you look at it here, have you got it?
Madam Chair, it's on page 3,
yes.
Line 24, that's in the Beagle now,
yeah.
Where
yes.
We no longer find those words.
Yeah. It was under E, probably. It was probably under E at that time. In fact, not probably, it was. So now we go back to C, having dealt with both. On C, can we have a member to remove the entire C from A to F? Thank you, Honourable Vandermeer, seconded by Honourable Hadebe. And then we go to D. Okay, we see that there, D. And the D there is commission means broad-based black economic empowerment. All right. Established by Section 13B. Can we have someone to move? Honourable Mabasa, seconded by Honourable Kwabasa. And then we go through to E. And E is respect to fronting. Does everyone see that there? On your bill here that you're looking at, it's currently line 34 and 35. Department means fronting practice. We have someone to move those amendments, please. Honourable Waili, seconded by Honourable Hadebe. And then we move to the whole of that, you see, it's a very long one here. If you look what was that insertion there, the insertion started on page 3, if you can see that there, and terms go over the page. Do we all see that? And I'm sure, Elliot, Tynum, you're also following this, are you not, here? On page
apologies,
3.
Apologies, Madam Chair, it appears as if my AVO has been taken. I'm trying to find it.
Yeah, that's why I'm just... Okay, can we just check? And I think the important thing here is, I once again believe that we dealt with the contentious clause and spent 2 hours on it virtually, but I do believe some of the clauses are not contentious that have been amended, and I certainly would have hoped that all members of the committee can participate in supporting the amendments, which some of them were present when they went through subcommittee as well, and this has been a change of heart on the fronting practice. So we have that one there. Goes. Have you got that, administrator?
I'm back, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Yeah. To the bottom of page 3, to the top of page 4. All right, do we all see that? Going right up until it is 3, Roman small 3, the matter, plus F, 15, that's line 15, and G, 20, up to, which refers, then it says, referred to in section 9. That is line 19, probably. Is that right? On this. Now, that whole amendment, can we have someone to propose the adoption thereof? Right. Honourable Professor, seconded by Honourable Vandermeer. Then we move to the next one, and that is the amendment of Section 2853. It is clause 2, section 2 of the Principal Act is hereby amended. We have the deletion, the repeal of A and B. Do you see that in your current line 25? And then again under B, the deletion of economic empowerment. Do we see that there? And with the addition of startups, etc., that is contained in probably 30, 29, 28, and 27, just around there. Are we all on the same page 4? And we checked on that, they have to be both have to be there. C. You've also got H there, the addition of the following paragraph, which is probably line 31 to 34. increasing effect black owned and Maliki enterprises. Can we have someone to propose adoption here? Right, Honourable Kogasa. Honourable Waili. I was under the impression, you know, Honourable Kajibi, that the members of the subcommittee had supported our previously, and now there's a difference of opinion on everything. I heard them saying that most of this was fine. Right. Amendment of Section 3, Act 53-2003. It's Section 3, Section 3 of the Principal Act. And what has to happen around there, Clause 3 is rejected, it says. Clause 3. And basically, you then have that amendment, in fact. And the amendment, having followed it here now, looking at it, is really what you are seeing on your current bill you're working on, and that is by the substitution of paragraph A of the following paragraph. Small a to give effect to its objectives and purposes, etc. purposes. And then you come to 2. So that was A, small a, B, 1, 2. In the event of any conflict between this act, this must have been the so-called trumping clause, and any other law in force immediately prior to the date of commencement of the Broad-Based Black Economic Empowerment Amendment Act 2013, this act prevails. If a conflict specifically relates to a matter dealt with. So there is a qualifier here. There is a qualification. And I think that's important to a matter dealt with in this act itself. Now, and we have someone to propose the adoption of that inclusion. Honourable Khadebi, seconded by Honourable. I think there are counter proposals. Honourable Mazda Mirva has done that. However, we do have counter proposals and amendments here. I'm looking to see who they're from now. That's from yourself, Advocate Albert. Section 3 of Act 3. The amendment of the trumping clause by adding the following words at the end. I know you addressed this previously, but for the purposes of going through the bill now, we need to address this clause by clause, which you did agree to. If you wish to speak to that, you may.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, the interpretation given by the law advisors, state law advisors, is in line with what I thought myself is the correct interpretation, and that the Employment Equity Act, when it comes to employment equity elements, is to be will still trump this act. The amendment, the proposed amendment, which reads subject to section 63, it's just basically putting up a flag and stating what has already been interpreted as the correct interpretation, by just making it more certain. So that whoever reads this act and who doesn't have a legal background would know, okay, well, they have to go look at section 63 as well. Thank you very much.
I certainly do think, you know, Honourable Albert, that in the light of that, what you're really saying is you, I hope I'm interpreting you correctly, that the amendment you were proposing, you believe, having heard the state law advisors and others, you believe you are now covered by this. I hope I didn't misunderstand you.
Yes, the legal interpretation is that it would automatically be applicable. So once you put this into wording, you codify this, then you only could state the obvious, but only for the people who have legal backgrounds, it would be obvious, not necessarily for a layperson who reads that. Thank you.
Now, in view of that, I know you have taken a position not to support any of the others, but you may wish to think of this one if it is proposed elsewhere. Can we have someone to propose this? are you proposing? Thank you, Honourable Albert. On record, this is the thing, yeah. And seconded by? No, it's what's in here. I'm asking, are you moving this amendment, you see? This is what he is. Can you make it clear for everyone?
Madam Chair, yes, I am moving the amendment as stated in my proposed amendments on page 3. Section 3 of...
You are moving your own amendment. I thought you had accepted the clarification that had been provided. So...
I have accepted the clarification, but I would like to state that this amendment would make it clear what the position in law would be. That's what I'm stating. So,
all right. Well, you have proposed that. Do you have a seconder here? Honourable McIntosh. Right. Now, are there members opposed to that? Honourable Hodebe? Well, let's see the members. There's only two who oppose. Oh, right. I see members opposing it. There are five members from the ANC who have opposed it. Right? Now, we then have to go back to the original one that is here. So that amendment falls away. Now, can we go back to what is here and have someone to propose this amendment here? Right here in front of us on page 4. Honourable Van der Merwe proposes that, seconded by Honourable Mabasa. Opposed? Can we have those who oppose it? What's here? What is here? No one opposes it. Right, thank you. Right, okay. All right, so that's fine. It's now moving on. That's one of those unusual ones. There's substitution of Section 8 of 853-2003, Clause 4. Bottom of the page. Can we then have, because you see here it is the substitution, it's this whole clause. I hope members get a clear understanding of that now. Okay, and it's the whole of that. So you start off at, sort of about 46 or 7, and you move across, as I understand, right through to... No, but this is it. You've substituted it. We just need it moved, though, right through to... That's the end of that page. Do we have someone to move that? Yes, Honourable Hodebe, seconded by Honourable Van der Merwe. Right, now we move to page 5. Amendment of Section 9 of 8.5. Commissioner, Deputy Commissioner. I think there was something here from the ANC under this. Also this was the, I saw one here from the ANC. It's clause 8. Clause 5, okay. Dealing with the commission, that's clause 8.5, okay. And we have someone to propose adoption of clause 5, section 9. Through to line 15. Thank you. Honourable Van der Merwe, seconded by Honourable Waili. And then amendment of section 10. Of the Principal Act here, the clause 6. And you've got there from just following on both ends. Just a minute, I'm just getting my own place on the amendments. Fine, thank you.
Point, just something that may occur now and again. The one that we have just addressed is up to line 14. I think we read it as 15, but we should say as 14.
Right, the end of line 14. Just on that, we then would move to clause 6, the following section is hereby substituted for section 10 of the Principal Act. Okay. And there we have from 10.1, try and get your lines then in order, 19.18, that was line 18 there. On, before we get there, you have, yes, on that, take into account as far as is reasonably possible, that's been deleted, right? You have a substitution there. That is what you have here, okay, in respect of the 20s onwards, moving through to, I'll take them separately, under A, B, C, D, right? I hope the law, state law advisors are also following this, so that if I do make a correction, that corrects me. Right, is that correct? Right, may someone to move it then, please? Thank you. Honourable Hadebe, seconded by Honourable Kogasa. We then move to the E as well, which is about line 31. Right down to sector. Do we see that? It is from E, right, E, 2A, B, 3, 4. Right. Do you have anything up there?
If you, Madam Chair, there's an amendment in 2A, which is page 5 of the Evil, line 32.
We have done the company, we've adopted that one. Thanks, it shows you keeping us in touch.
I'm sorry, Madam, just to let us be refreshed on that amendment.
Well, we were on clause 6 there, which was about 15 or so, on page 5. The following section is hereby substituted for section 10 of the Principal Act, all right?
Sorry, I thought we were on 2A.
Well, we were then, now, but I'm just saying that's when we started and it was adopted, the first part. You asked us to go back a bit.
No, I'm sorry, I'm raising the matter that the advocates that I'd almost just mentioned.
Well, we just pointed out that we've just adopted it.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, I think it's not that easy to follow two documents for any of us. I think that's what it amounted to. I think he's in the same position of me looking across. All right, E. Right down to sector, which is 47, I think. Right, do we have someone to propose adoption? Thank you, Honourable Waiili. Seconded by Honourable Abasa. Moving on now to the whole of that clause, which will be 7. Looking here, it was 7. Well, look, we didn't make...
No changes on the trees on the edges.
No, we didn't. So from that, it is just for the record to note, do we agree to that? We have someone to propose that clause be moved. Thank you. Yes, is that on, Honourable McIntosh? I see your light on.
No, it's on.
It's on, your light, your mic.
Oh, my apologies.
I wasn't sure now. Right. We have someone to propose adoption. Honourable Kogasa, seconded by? Yeah, Honourable Hadebe. Right, and we then, we move now to page 6. Following section. On page 6, outline 6, information to insert below it. Right. The next item, we have someone to propose that amendment. Thank you all for the dedicated bar. We then get to the next issue,
chasing along with the AMP ones themselves, that we're not overlooking what you have to say. Now, yours is line 34. Line 31, you've got Harvey Commissioner to insert and acting commissioner. You got that there? Yeah, some of these changes were actually put forward by yourself in the member of the opposition.
But if he has to just consult the committee,
He can tell them that he's doing it and he must talk to them, but if they say we don't like your candidate, he can show us the middle finger. Is that the difference between consult and consultation, in consultation?
I think, look, no one is disagreeing in principle. I would see if you have a challenge, Honourable Khadebi. I mean, you heard the state law advisor.
Chairperson, I think that that aspect is actually the serious problem here is number B, Chair. Whereby, let's look at the principle of the appointment of the commissioner. You go to the National the Consumer Protection Act, where the commissioner is someone who is independent, who's actually the CEO, who must account according to the BFMA. But when you look at this one, in this situation, is that we are having a situation whereby this commissioner is not the accounting officer. Instead, that commissioner accounts to the director general. But if you can look at the chair, we are putting more stringent conditions for the appointment of someone who accounts to someone else, unlike when we did with the National Consumer Commission. Because when you go to number three, it says that you think about the minister providing the particulars of at least three people, and then his preference must be made. But when you go to the other one, it does not go to that one. So will that the first part will not be sufficient enough? But I think that the minister must, in consultation with the relevant portfolio committee, must propose. If you say in, it means that must get a concurrence of the portfolio committee and drop number B and drop away this one, which was being proposed here. And then just cancel number B, and then we leave with number A as it is, and then it will be fine.
All right. Let's just get that quite clear then. We understand what in consultation means, and we agree. We have no a general agreement and understanding of that. And then we come to the... And then we come down saying just the must in consultation which was raised, okay? We all agree. Now, let's just, as I see it, then if that is the case, can we move that one just on its own, that particular one? Yeah. Let's just move that first part, if there is that agreement there. Yes. Can we have a mover there? Yes. We're going to be looking at the other one as well, though. So, Honourable Hill Lewis, yes. Seconded by? Yeah, Honourable Waili. Right. Now, we've broken it up, as we understand that. Keeping that there, you know, it's there now, we've taken it forward. B, the minister must, for the purpose of paragraph A, provide the portfolio committee with. And I think here, if you wish to look at this point then, Honourable Khadebi, because this is your amendment, does everyone have it?
No,
I don't
have it.
Okay, fine then. No. Now, I guess I better keep one. What's that one up? Where? They were all handed out, because when I asked... All right. Everyone must have the written amendment. Yeah. Who hasn't got it, please? And then you'll be given a copy. You see, right, now, can I, I would like to allow you to speak before Debbie.
All right, thank you, Chairperson. If we go to number D, the number B, Chair, is very stringent when it comes to the issue of the appointment of the commission, of which that commission is going to account to the director general. So the issue of having all these processes of providing three possible candidates, whereas in number A, are very clear that the minister must be in consultation with the public committee. So why go through the long route of having that part? Because I think that minister will scan the environment and come to the person who's relevant with that. And then that person will be approved by the portfolio committee. So we don't need number B for that. It is that amendment, Chair, which is here. I think that must be ignored too. Yeah, that amendment must also, this one came through me, must also be withdrawn there. Because the number A caters for a total scenario. So what I'm probably saying is that let's withdraw the appeal.
The minister must be provided for the committee with, because number 8 is already speaking about in consultation.
Okay, but I want you to be not compulsive. All right. I've had a request from all the legal advisors. You see, it's not just us that have these challenges as political people. Our own advisors and legal people. You've got 2 minutes. Thanks.
No, so it's just adjourning for 2 minutes. But maybe what you'd like to do is keep the thing with the opposition vote go faster. Because I think you just argue to withdraw.
For a term of not more than 5 years. Yes.
that the principal, the term of 8 years, the minister must appoint as an executive authority. But when we go further to ULE, what we also said in the subcommittee, what we said in the subcommittee is that the minister cannot just do it alone. Because this person is a key person who's going to deal with the issue of empowerment. So there must be a role of a portfolio committee. So that's why the amendment which the NC came with is that that one becomes number 1A. The minister appoint a person who's capable of qualifying and appearing to be the commissioner for a term of not more than 5 years, becomes number 1A. And then number B comes that when appointing the commissioner, the minister must consult the relevant portfolio committee of parliament. That's what the NC is proposing. And delete it. And delete number, this one, the new one we're having, delete number 1, A and B.
Yes, I have.
I want to ask members to keep this correct. The state law is fine, you've got to. I am aware of where you are now, Honourable Fadebe, with that introduced bill. Okay. So, I think it was clearly read out. We have someone, you've proposed it. We have someone.
Madam Chair, can I just ask Honourable Fadebe to read? Look, I think I understand what he's saying. In other words, he wants to leave from the Act. Existing at that first sentence. Have any?
No, I'll just read you the bill.
Okay. Okay, but you just read here what he now wants from 13C, page 31. I mean line 31. Sorry.
Thank you, Chairperson. If you can look at the original page, page 6, 13C. Is this that the minister must appoint a person with a suitable qualification and experience to be the commissioner for a term of not more than 5 years. Instead, here, that one becomes 1A. That aspect, that statement becomes 1A. Mm-hmm. And then we have a B. A B becomes, when appointing the commissioner, the minister must consult the relevant portfolio committee. Thank you.
So that's it clearly on the table. Honourable Hill-Lewis.
Now, the use of that consult, do we take it to mean that there is other in consultation?
Don't you want that to
clarify? Yes. State Law Advisor. Chairperson, the only obligation of the minister is to consult. They need not necessarily be agreement.
Honourable McIntosh.
Madam Chair, can I just ask Honourable Khadebe, because I think those of us on the working committee felt quite strongly that this was a very important element in oversight. Whether he wanted to remove in consultation and replace it with consult, and if not, why does he have consult and not in consultation?
David?
Thank you, Chairperson. It's true that in the original bill, the issue of consultation was not there at all. So that's why with this appointment, with this new one,
there is consultation. But what we have to distinguish is that we have executive authority and parliamentary authority, of which those authorities are not the same to other bodies. Eventually, the person who's going to pick up a can when things go wrong will be the minister. So I think that when we put stringent conditions like that, it means that should there be any failure on that, we should also be culpable because that appointment was done together with us. But when it's consulted us, because I think what we have to satisfy ourselves is that that person who's being appointed has got suitable qualifications and experience, so that the minister of the Swati must come and explain to us why he arrived at that appointment. But then to say that in consultation, it means that we're already tying him down that now he must do it together with us. So it means that when he does that together with us, it means that if there's a fallout there, we are also going to be capable for that, because that person will be our appointment. So it means that now we have played the role of the executive and parliament.
I know what you're saying. I just want to confirm myself. That doesn't include the four, does it, with the Minister of Finance? It just, in removing everything there, you were only addressing the B.
Yeah.
1A and 1B. Right, I just wanted to clear that up. Honourable Mabasa?
I will second colleague Khatib, because we don't want to be part of the player and part of the referee at the same time. It's better to remain referee.
Right. I haven't actually put it to the committee entirely that way, because when we've had amendments, we've allowed some discussion on the matter, Honourable Mabasa. But I do hear you concur. Thank you. Honourable McIntosh?
Madam Chair, I just want us, I'm not necessarily disagreeing, I don't even go to that stage. I just want to be sure that I'm understanding what Honourable Khadebe is proposing, because let me put an example. You decide to marry a Makoti. You go to her father and you say, I want to marry your daughter, and I'm going to send them Pongi to do the negotiations for Lobola. And he then says, thank you very much, that's respectful. That's consults. If he goes to the Makoti's father and says, look, I would quite like to marry this daughter of yours, how do you feel about it? And he might say, like Jacob or Laban did to Jacob, no, I've got another daughter. You must marry her first, and then you can get another one. Now, that would then be in consultation with the bride or the fiancé's father. Whereas in the first case, it's consulting. In other words, he can't technically veto it, but you've got to, out of courtesy, inform the father of the girl. Whereas if you do it in consultation with, it is more powerful. And I think the advocate must confirm that. But what I want to find out is, what is Honourable Khadebe wanting? Does he want us to have a more powerful hold on the minister, or a less powerful hold?
Don't go down the marriage route.
No, the marriage route is very simple. If the father of the bride does not want you, if no giri you. No giri you. In the process. Chairperson, I think that what is critical here is the issue of the blurring of the legislative authority and the executive authority. I think that what we do, Chairperson, is that we must give the executive a space to do their work.
Yeah.
Eventually, it is them who are going to pay on us. What is critical of us is that if we put a lawyer, that once the people with a person suitable qualification and experience, that's what we have to get from the minister when he consults. Is this person having a relevant experience? Where does that experience come from? It's fine. If he's satisfied with that, then you see that he got that experience and those skills, and then we're fine. Then it is his choice. So at the end of the day,
should anything, or actually, our executives, we are too lenient to ask in some cases you take it as appointment. Because some of the appointments are our appointments, and everything they end up with them. That's why we must avoid this blurring of the executive and legislative authority. So I think it's one it covers everyone properly without being too stringent to the minister. But what is critical here is the issue of the fact that this one, this commissioner, is different from the other commissioner. This one is not the executive authority. He's not going to be the accounting officer. So why put stringent conditions for that? I think that's the perspective.
That's an important difference. That does not have executive authority. It does come under the DG per se. Honourable Hill Lewis, I will come back to you, Advocate Swat.
Can we second the amendment?
Madam Chair, can I just...
Sorry,
no,
mate. Just a minute, thing. We are going to go that route in just a second. I just want to hear Advocate Swat.
And then after Advocate Swartz, we're going to actually go proposing and seconding route, okay? Advocate Swartz.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to say from a legal perspective, we would be more in favour with there not being in consultation with the committee, because we have to bear in mind the Constitution the Constitution guarantees the separation of powers, and we're going to be encroaching on the executive powers if we say in consultation. From our perspective, we like to say that we ourselves only consult.
I'd say it enabled us to carry out more effective, robust oversight over them, call them to account. You see, I mean, this has been the problem with one or two appointments here, that we found ourselves incestuously involved. And the difficulty, you know, extracting yourself. No, I think it was in the Government of National Unity that was, yeah, but anyway, I wish you were not part. I think we must now, we've exhausted this one, and I think we know where we stand, we know what the intention is. I'll put it formally to you now. Advocate for Debbie, we have put this. You know, with all the names, etc., Honourable Debbie.
Thank you, Sir President. I move that.
Yeah. Propose and move it, seconded by Honourable Hill Lewis. Yeah, there we are. It's the log jam, and we move on. Now, members. Let's move to the next piece here. Right, okay. Got them again. 13.3. And then we went, and that was clause 8, where we had that. All right. We then move on to, let's see, page 11. Right. So I'll have to move the others just to, right, looking at that, then we've only dealt with A and B there. We need to deal with 2, 3, 3A, I think it is, B, C, 4, 5, 6, A, B, C, D, 7. We have someone to move that, please.
Yes.
Thank you, Honourable Hill Lewis, seconded by Honourable Vandenova. We then go on to the appointment of a deputy commissioner and staff of Commission 13D here, and then we still have part of that there, page 6, clause of the commissioner here, R4. The commissioner, I can read from here, in consultation with the minister, etc. 13D, 1, 2, 3A, B, 4A, B. Conditions of appointment of each staff member. We have someone to move that adoption, please. Thank you. Honourable Van Merwe, seconded by Honourable Waili. Sciences of the Commission. 13E. The Commission is financed from A, B, 2. The Auditor General has audited the Commission. We have somebody then. It must. We just look at the insertions here, though, which is you see them already in B. I hope you're all following on page 3 at the bottom, which added the word lawfully. Money and lawfully. Do you see that there? Right. Can we then have someone to propose? Thank you, Honourable McIntosh, seconded by Honourable Kwabasa. Right. Functions of the Commission. And that's 13F, right? And that is, there are some amendments that were made here, as you see, 7, okay, 13F1A, so you just check for your amendments there on your amendment section A, B, C, D, E, right? F, G, okay. I'm just noting that on line 51, you've got the substantiation which you added. All right, it's there. On to page 8, H, I, 2, A, B, 3, A, B, this is it, but we're not quite there yet. Small Roman 1, 2, and 3, C, 4, 4A, B, C, 5, to the end of the Commission's duties and functions under this Act. Right? And up to that point there, you will recall in line 36 to omit and assignment. Do you remember that point there? So it's all captured. Can we have someone to propose? Yes. Honourable Hill Lewis, seconded by Honourable
Hill. No, I have a question.
Yes, certainly, you know.
My understanding is that I read this to mean that the commissioner may ask the SIU to investigate the matter. And my understanding is that only... Oh, sorry, 35. My understanding is that only the president can ask the SIU to investigate the matter by proclamation. So I just want some clarity on that.
Not as familiar with that particular clause. Let me check with the state law advisors. You know, because I think you are correct. but I can't say this categorically, you know, and confirm it. Can you please check?
Madam Chair, it's perfectly within the competence of Parliament to give such a statutory power in an Act to the Commission. Unless my colleagues would disagree, but I think that is the case, Madam Chair.
Look, I need a short adjournment here myself, for myself. I'm not satisfied.
Chair, sorry, if I may just interrupt there. I mean, Honourable Thamad was right. It doesn't say investigate. It just says enter into an agreement. I took that. That's why I started by saying I take it to read. Because I don't know what other kind of agreement they would have. I mean, maybe the SIU provides other services I'm not aware of, but as far as I know, they're an investigation unit. So...
I agree with what Yuan said, and the power given here is to perform, to enter into an agreement, to perform any of the Commission's duties and functions under this Act. So it is a fairly wide power, but that power would include the powers of investigation contained in the whole purpose.
All right. So you now, you feel you're on sure ground. Now, because to start with, you were all in a quandary. But that's good. It was good. I hope he was. all right, we've had the clarification. Can we then go for proposal of that, if necessary? Honourable Van der Merwe, seconded by Honourable Hadebe. Reporting. 313G. Just going back here. Page 9, page 8. So you go right to the top from line 28. No, we've done that. Assignment. It's on page 8, from 43. Something else I'm confused by some of the lines different on the one page. Who is this here? What are they for amendments here? And then what's the main one? All right, the top of your page 4 of those amendments, you'll see your note 9, which talks about line 28, and it's subsection 2. All right? And substitute or for number 2 now.
Okay.
Line 44 on page 8. But you see, I'm sorry, on that basis, for me, it's to do with Johannesburg Stock Exchange. You remember that issue that came up. So we're working with, if you go to the, they'll be working with here, the broad-based economic empowerment bill, B42B, we're looking at line 44. All right, that's the one we've been making. B42B, line 44. Are people still looking?
What's the problem?
Oh, no, you found it. Because I see you're still looking.
All public answers and yes. In such manner as may be prescribed.
We're saying, and to substitute that section. We need that, because we're doing a substitution, we need to actually get someone to propose a document. Thank you, Honourable Van der Merwe, seconded by Honourable Hadebe. All right. And then we've done that one there. Parliament, number 2, 50. Commission, right. On here, the Commission, under the reporting, per se, that's covered that one. You then still retained all sectoral education training authorities and contemplated the Skills Development Act must report. We have that one proposed and adopted. Please, let's move. Thank you, Honourable Van der Merwe, seconded Honourable Kovasa. Delegations. Under delegation 13H. It's very difficult on this one. The Commissioner may delegate any power. May delegate any power conferred on him or her. That particular one, 2, with a reference to 13D14, moving to page 9, 3, 3A, B, and C, may be withdrawn or amended by the Commissioner. Those are your delegations here. We have somebody to adopt and propose. Thank you, Honourable Waili, and seconded by Honourable Van der Merwe. Moving on to special committees.
I should have had some of those in writing for water treatment.
Right, now this is going to go fast. Special, I'll ask the committee secretary to alert me to when there's a substitution. All right? Specialist committees 13I, 1, 2, 3, A, B, C, E. 4, sorry, 8, 3AB, 4AB, Roman small 1, 2, 5ABC, 6ABC, 7ABC, 8, 9AB. We have someone to propose adoption special committee. Yes, thank you, Honourable Hadebe, seconded by Honourable Kwabasa. On to investigation fire commission, 13J. 1, going on to page 10, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 6AB, 7AB. B, small Roman I, 2, 3, and 4. Pertaining to appeal or review, someone to propose adoption of investigations by commission. Thank you, Honourable Mabasa. Seconded by Honourable Khadebi. Going on to page 10, summonses. Clause 13K, at the time during an investigation being conducted by the commission may issue a summons to any person who is believed to be able to search that 1A, B, 2A, B, 3A, B, 4A, B, 5. And summons to propose adoption. Thank you, Honourable Van der Merwe, seconded by Honourable Kwabasa. Moving on to confidential information, 13L, page 11, 13L, 1, 2, 3A and B, 4A and B, 5, 6, 7. We have someone to propose adoption of that. Honourable Hill Lewis.
3B, line 24. I just want to, line 24. Provide written reasons for that decision. Should it not read to the applicants, or is that implicit?
Okay,
Alright, I'll turn that over to
Thank you, Jefferson. So provide the written reasons. The only conclusion that can be made is that the reason will be made to the complainant, because the complainant submitted the reasons why it should be confidential.
Mm.
So if we read this, the only reasonable conclusion that one can make is that the reason must be provided to the person that submitted the reasons why it is confidential. So we don't feel that there's a need to qualify it.
Quite right there, Honourable Hill Lewis, it is implicit. Yeah, it's clear. All right. So when we have someone to propose that adoption of confidential information, Honourable Van der Merwe, seconded by Honourable Khadebe, but with what were you... All right, okay. Conflicting interests of employees, 13M. There we are there. It's A, B, C, D. We have someone to propose adoption of that one. Honourable Mabasa, seconded by Honourable Waili. Offences in connection with commission. Still on page 11, moving to page 12. 13 in 1A. B. 2A, B, C, D. 3A, B, C, D, E, F. Right, ending with other than as contemplated in section 13K4A. We have someone to propose adoption. Right, the Honourable Kwabasa, seconded by the Honourable Hill Lewis. Honourable, other offences and penalties. 13O, line 25. A person commits an offence if that person knowingly A, B, C, D. 2, 3, A, B, 4, 5, A, B, 6. Any penalty provided for in this Act. Can we have someone to propose adoption? Thank you, Honourable Van der Merwe, seconded by Honourable Khadebe. Page 13. Prohibition on business with organs of state following conviction under this Act.
For 10 years.
Any person convicted of offence in terms of this Act. Yeah, that's right. On page 12, I'm looking at all your other amendments here, which are noted here as... Where's this 10 years? 18, your note 18, is that right?
Yeah.
On page 12, in line 36, after not, to get the line, after not, to insert for a period of 10 years from the date of conviction. It is there.
Yeah.
It's there. And it's here on page 13, line 4. Right? The not is quite clear. Two, when the person, when the convicted person is not a natural person. But let me first get an agreement on that change there, that particular one. We have yet Honourable Van der Merwe, seconded by Honourable Kadebe. Two, the whole one, adoption proposed by Honourable Van der Merwe, seconded by Honourable Kadebe. Now we go to the substitution of Section 14 of Act 53, 2003, 9. The following section is hereby substituted for Section 14 of the Principal Act, Regulation, Guidelines and Practice Notes. 14.1, A, B, C, D, E, F. Yeah, you've got the exclusion of an order to ensure. Do you see that there? And four, the proper implementation and administration of this Act. Two, the Minister may by notice in the Gazette issue guidelines and practice notes relating to the interpretation and application of the Act. So that was 14 then, regulations, etc., proposed by Honourable Mike Waili, seconded by Honourable Khadebe. Clause 10. Clause rejected. Cut that clause and that the following be a new clause. To follow clause 9, short title. And commencement. 10. Among this act is called the Broad-Based Black Economic Empowerment Amendment Act 2013. 2. Except for Section 3B, this Act comes into operation on a date fixed by the President by proclamation in the Gazette. 3. Section 3B comes into operation 1 year after the date contemplated in subsection 2. 4. In the event that the President fixes different dates in respect of different provisions of this Act, Section 3B comes into operation 1 year after Section 3A commences. Do you remember the qualification we put there?
Yes.
Right. Now, I hope we were all on board there, because that one we all agreed with. Do you remember that one, Honourable Hilders? The one that people felt was essential, you know, in this bill. It's not always we do fix that kind of amendment. We have someone to propose adoption, thank you. Honourable Hill Lewis, seconded by Honourable Kovasa. Now, we did say originally we would end at 6, and we're over time, but, you know, we're moving quite speedily. Honourable
Hill-Lewis. Yeah, I don't know how much you're going to shout me now, but I would like to take us back to 13.0.
Oh.
Yes.
Okay. Page?
I'll find it here now.
12.
Now, Chair, 13.0 provides for other offences and penalties. It provides quite a comprehensive list and procedure, which is all quite correct. Now, if you compare it to... I just wanted to use that reference because my concern is on page 30A, the cancellation of contract or authorization. So
just give us the number there. I know you said page 6.
Page 6, top of the page, 13A.
Yeah.
Now, if you look at that, it provides enormous power to SOEs to cancel contracts without the process in 13O having been followed. So what I'd like to propose, Chair, is that we simply say a person or entity or enterprise, having been found guilty of an offence in terms of this act, can have the contract cancelled. So, just to keep it...
you mean a reference to what you started off with?
Yeah, a reference to 13.0.
13.0.
So, if I can just work on some wording for a minute, I'll
All right. I think, again, the state, the advocates are just had a conferral, did you? And are you ready to comment just at that point?
Sorry.
Madam Chair, sorry. Madam Chair, just on the spur of the moment, based on that proposal, this, if we can call this a penalty or a sanction that we have in the provision that you referred to, it would then be a prerequisite that there should be a criminal conviction before this power can be exercised. Whereas, as it stands at the moment, that can be based merely on the basis of false information having been provided in respect of a particular application. It would not require a criminal conviction in a court of law in order to exercise the power in 30A.
Chair, if I may respond.
So,
on page 12, 13.0b, it is a criminal offence to provide false information or misrepresent information to a BBBEE verification professional in order to secure a particular broad-based black economic empowerment status. So, the offence described in 13.a is an offence, a criminal offence described in this Act. So we should make the two consistent.
At this point, I just want to read that myself. I think we all do have it, but I'm actually moving to Advocate Swartz.
Thank you, Chairperson. If that is interpretation, that means that the person would first have to be found guilty, and that may take a long time. What this section merely proposes, what is already there in the common law, that if there is misrepresentation in a contract, then you are entitled to cancel it. This doesn't mean that the party who is aggrieved by the cancellation cannot approach the court and seek appropriate relief. But to wait for a criminal conviction and then the contract continues, I'm not sure how practical that is, Madam Chair.
All right. I think you've had a response on that front. The contention is not that this doesn't deal with that in 13.0 at all, but that rather the 13A is based on common law as well under contract, as I understood the response. It's there already. You certainly can have a last word and then I would have to move on.
Chair, I think in the interest of justice, I mean, I hear what the advocate says, but in the interest of justice, I think it is quite right that, a company cannot cancel, in some cases, a multi-billion rand contract because they have suspicion that some false information was submitted. They need to be able to prove that in a court of law first, before cancelling their contract. And if they can't prove it, then they can't cancel the contract. So, I would prefer it if we linked 13A and 13.0 with a simple phrase, something like any person or enterprise having been found guilty of an offence in terms of 13.0 of this Act.
You know, I just want to caution one thing, and I am going to take the AC's comments. What worries me is one of the purposes of this Act is to get rid of this fronting, which was being done with impunity, and we all agreed on that there was, this fronting, complex fronting, not what we saw as just the easy fronting. And, in order to get rid of it, what you're really saying is you have this complex fronting. You then spend 2 years in a court of law, or a year, whatever. We know it doesn't take a month on those times. And then they continue to front. That is my own concern here, is the intention of the Act. But I'll take Honourable Khadebe and Honourable Marasa.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think that one of the transformative aspects of this bill is that it criminalizes fronting. But at the same time, Chairperson, really we must deal with this thing as drastically as possible. So what is critical here? What the advocate is saying is that when it is found by those guys who are entering into agreement that something went amiss here, those guys who are aggrieved, they've got the right to terminate that. So if this person has got any claim, he can go to the court. He, which of course the individual is, he must go to the court of law, which is going to be very expensive. So this one become a deterrent for them to go continue to do that. Francine, I think it must remain as it is.
I have heard from you, and last comment will be from Honourable Mabaza.
No, I merely wanted to second both yourself, Colleague Chair, and Colleague Hadebe, because the main point is the intention. Why did we go into all this trouble? It's because of correcting what has been happening.
Honourable McIntosh.
Madam Chair, I understand where Honourable Hillous is coming from, but first of all, it can only be done on account of false information knowingly furnished. So if they know about it, I mean, if that's in fact the suspicion of the whoever's doing the, let's call it SAA, then they can cancel the contract. But of course, the aggrieved party can always seek an interdict to stop the cancellation, which could then immediately, and it could go quite quickly. But I also think, hopefully, it wouldn't be necessary, but the thing that concerns me, apart from the racial elements of the act, is I don't think we want to be seen to be indulging false information knowingly supplied.
Being said there, we did in fact adopt that, but we did allow Honourable Hill Lewis to take us back, and I hope there's a sense of appreciation. Yeah, thank you. Right. Honourable Members, we've now come to the end of that clause by clause, the Amendment Bill, and I wish to read report of the Portfolio Committee on Trade and Industry on the Broad-Based Black Economic Empowerment Bill, B42-2012, dated the 23rd of May 2013. The Portfolio Committee on Trade and Industry, having considered the subject of the Broad-Based Black Economic Empowerment Bill, B42-2012, referred to it as classified by the Joint Tagging Commission, JTM, as the Section 76 bill, reports the bill with amendments B42B 2012. Now, we've got clauses rejected, which have been noted, and we now need to get a mover. Just before that, right, thank you. Now what we need, I'm looking at everyone now. I've just raised that. Yeah, I just raised that issue. That's why I asked for it just a moment. I got a bit confused at that point. Right. You know, we now need an adoption for this report. Now, members, this is the opportunity to first propose adoption and then to second it. And then, if there are any objections, as I understand, the amendments will be noted. Am I correct here? They will be noted as part of our... Yes, now I'm talking about the actual amendments that were rejected. It will be noted in the minutes here as well. Right. So, can I please get someone to propose an adoption of the report, Honourable Kwabasa?
seconded by Honourable Van der Merwe.
Madam Chair, I just want to clarify, it's just the adoption of a report.
Yes.
Okay.
No, it's the totality. That's why, I wouldn't have got there. Very often what happens is that members do agree on certain clauses, but not on the whole bill.
Madam Chair, we can't agree to the whole bill. It's more because of the powers given to the Commissioner and the Minister, you know. We're not happy with that at all.
Yes, but we'll note the objection in the report. Honourable Hill Lewis.
Chair, I would like to note the objection of the Democratic Alliance. Do I need to, the record reflects all of the objections I raised earlier. Do I need to restate them now, or?
No.
Okay, well then please note the objection of the DA.
Honourable Albert.
Madam Chair, I'd also like to register our objection for the reasons stated before. Thank you very much.
I think we have conducted this in order. We're not going to have people saying that there were certain challenges. It's principles that were looked at politically. But I want to thank all members of the committee for overstaying half an hour later. I won't keep you other than to say when is the next meeting and the venue.
Madam Chair, I would like to propose a vote of thanks to your chairmanship. And I think you've been a fine leader, and thank you.
No, we do appreciate it. But I think it wasn't me. A leader without followers is not a leader. thank you, all of us, actually. The committee has worked well, collegially. We have not agreed on everything, but we were able to persuade each other here and there, and some of us gained fresh insights. I also speak for myself. Please make the announcement, Mr. Herman.
Chair, the next committee meeting is tomorrow morning, starting at 9, room V454.
And the items, now that you've changed to
the agenda items will be, we will have a response from TTI to the submissions that we've received on the SEZ bill, as well as a response from our parliamentary legal advisor on the SEZ bill, and I don't think we're going to and consideration of the IPAC report.
As I see it, yes. Honourable Hill Lewis.
Chair. I'm afraid I'm a little bit lost for due process here. I just noted the objections of the DA to the report, which, you see, the question wasn't actually put to the committee. And as I understood it, I was objecting to the report which recommends the bill to the House as amended.
With all the
amendments, yeah. Now, is there a way that we could just vote on a proper question? Because you see, I don't object to the whole bill in its entirety. I object to the sections that weren't amended as I wanted.
And I understand those objections. We will note them. I think this has come before us on the IPLAB or one of these bills. I think the Honourable Ambrosini, if you recall, Honourable Albert, raised certain objections. Do you remember that? And we had to, I'm not allowed to edit those, and they had to go as is. So it will be quite clear that those were your objections.
But now, my question, Chair, is it was not my intention to object to the entire bill. It was my intention to object to those.
Right.
And now I feel as though I may have done that. So what I'd like to do is just hear the question that we put to the House, and then I'll either support or object based on what I hear.
In terms of the report, the amendments proposed by yourself and the other members, which were rejected, will be captured in the report. The report will read, as the chairperson has read the report, that the report to go with amendments, but you indicate the following clauses were rejected and indicate who has proposed those amendments and also include the actual amendment as proposed by yourself. You also indicate that the DA and the I and the CO and the Free Income objected to the
certain clauses. In the bill. But I think Mr. Honourable Hill Lewis was really saying he didn't object to the whole bill. And he didn't want the wrong impression to be created in our report. That was really what you were saying.
I think what I'm saying is that I just want this clear for the record. I support the passage of the bill. I have certain objections to individual clauses which I've raised and which the record should reflect. But in its entirety, as a whole, I support the passage of the bill.
Well, then I think this puts a slightly different spin on it if you support the passage of the bill. You support the adoption of the bill. With certain objections. And in fact, that will be noticed. I think, look, I can understand where you're coming from. This is your first experience of this. But your colleagues in the opposition, as it were, in particular the Honourable Alberts, is well aware how this is captured. Am I right, Honourable Alberts, in this? So it's clearly there. You don't have to worry. I hope I'm not misleading you.
No.
Honourable Albert, Albert, am I misleading the member?
No, ma'am.
You're not. Chair, I trust you not. Just as long as we're very clear on the fact that the objection that I just raised was not to the bill. Yeah.
Sorry. I just have to be clear with him.
Thank you very much.
National legislation we're dealing with, not
you don't want to fall silent on the end. You don't want to fall silent on the end.
No.